We are back here on the Chris McCarthy Show. This is Ken Pittman filling in just for the morning. Barry Richards will take over the airwaves in just over 15 minutes. And your calls are next at 508-996-0500. The show started off not with my topic, but Michael Jansen. Michael Jansen called and read some numbers that I'm going to assume they're going to be somewhat in the ballpark, if not exactly right, because he's been a good watchdog over the years. So we're looking at a projection of a negative $150 million, if he's right. Even if he's wrong, I doubt he's $150 million off. And, you know, that potentially puts the city at a threat for receivership, which would be very chaotic, embarrassing, and there would be, I think, a rush to get new people in if that's the case, if the city was incapable of stopping something like that. Now, Governor Maura Healey has initiated a way for local politicians to raise the taxes so that she doesn't have to, so that she can keep her word that she didn't raise taxes. And that, to me, indicates she's running for higher office. But for the select boards and mayors throughout the Commonwealth, she would give these local powers the ability to confiscate more and more from you. I mean, her idea is to put a tax on a tax, right? The excise tax, she's going up on that. And they're starving for revenues. 508-996-0500. It's certainly going to go up on the millionaire's tax. That's, believe me, that's a no-brainer. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
I think back to the day Maura Healey was down here in that first like week or so when she had announced she was going to run, and they had that big press conference down at the base of the hurricane barrier, and Mayor Mitchell and different local representatives were there to endorse her and stuff. And to any measurable success since she's been in, what has she really done well for Greater New Bedford? That would be my first question. Secondly, as far as the development on the waterfront, there's actually still a lot of decent property not to be built up, but there's a lot of properties that say for sale or lease, because I'm down there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So to attract from other areas, like just in the fishing industry, work with Gloucester, work with Rhode Island, say this is what we have. We're the number one seaport in the country, definitely on the whole East Coast, and do something with it.
Well, where's the room for growth, though, with the south part now used for wind?
Well, the growth would be reusing the buildings that are there and land that is for sale and lease now.
Oh, I see. Yeah, but if you're going to bring fishing vessels down here, I don't know where you'd put them.
Well, yeah, that's because, well, right now we're in the process of extending two of our piers, repairing one of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's a definite. North of the bridge, there's barges being used, basically, in multiple places, like right next to 195. A lot of Roy Enochson's fleet is right there, or the O'Hara fleet. You can see them right next to Kyler's Seafood,
mm-hmm.
and all the way back down to the Fairhaven Bridge. So those are things that I know because of where I come from. And on a more respectful note, obviously losing Bruce Oliveira last Friday was devastated. I got a quick I was coming back from Fairhaven, and then I saw the post that Ian Abreu would put, and wow, what a loss. All the amazing things he did in all the different organizations, but it just says the person, like on the school committee issues, he's regionally going to be missed because he did so much work and worked with people. He could disagree with you, but still roll up his sleeve and say, okay, at least we're working in the same direction. I'm going to miss him. And that song from Diamond Rio came to my mind by the time I even got home. One more day.
One more day. Diamond Rio.
Get home.
Excellent band.
Yeah, and that song, One More Day, a message in that. And I'm thinking about him with that song. So thanks for filling in. And as always, good to hear from you, my
friend. I'm sorry for your loss. And you're right. It's a loss to a lot of people in the community. Did a lot of things outside of his office in terms of charity and, you know, just the activism. The guy was well-liked, I can say that. Everybody that I spoke to on his passing is said we lost a good one.
Okay, my friend. You have a good day.
Bye-bye. Take care. All right. 508-996-0500. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's take a first quick break, and we'll come back and get into some of these other things. We only have another 45 minutes. It's already, I forget we're in our third hour. We'll be back. You're listening to the Chris McCarthy Show. Ken Pittman filling in for, we get another 45 minutes here. So let's get the break going, and we'll come back.
Cold out there, time to winterize your car. Bring it to Mack Auto Sales, right in the city of New Bedford, right on Rivet Street. Mack Auto Sales, a family-owned business. Repairs and updates. All makes and models of automobiles. So if you need to get your car ready for the coming cold weather, and I'm sure you do, call and make an appointment today, 508-565-6221. Mack Auto Sales is open weekdays 9 to 5 for your convenience. You have a foreign car, that's perfect. Tim Weisberg has a foreign car, a Mazda. It's in the, one of the videos the other day. They did a wonderful job on it, rides like it's new. So Mack Auto Sales specializes in servicing foreign-made automobiles. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and their quality used cars for sale.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, soda, and a bag of chips for only $5.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All right, we've had a couple of callers on hold for too long. Let's get them on the air. You are next. Hi there.
Yes, good afternoon, Ken.
Hi.
In 1965, my father bought a Cutlass. In 66, I bought a Cutlass Oldsmobile. And in 67, when I got married, my wife had purchased a Malibu. All were assembled in Framingham, Massachusetts.
Wow. I had no idea. I don't know that part of the history. Huh.
Yeah, after they dropped the Oldsmobile line, I think they stopped producing in Framingham.
They were assembled here. So the parts are made in Detroit and they were assembled here? Because that's what we're seeing with foreign companies.
I'm not sure where the parts were manufactured. But I
forged,
know,
yeah.
One of her relatives worked at the plant in Framingham. I took a tour of it. Where it was, I could never find it again. But one of her relatives was one of the executive officers there. And at one time he said they were planning on looking at, I think it was either Freetown or Rochester, putting a secondary plant, but then there was changes within the organization, and that never came about.
Wow. Interesting. That's a cool history I was unaware of.
Yeah, just thought I'd drop that off.
No, I'm glad you did. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll go here. You are on the air with Ken. Hi.
Hey, Ken. Good afternoon. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Hey, always a treat when I put on the radio, whether you're filling in or doing your own show 9 to 12 on Saturdays, always a treat to hear you.
Thank you so much.
I love what you bring to the radio. Well, it's a fact. I really do. And I wish they'd give you a 5-day week slot somewhere. Or maybe you don't want it. But
no, they did. They originally came back. They offered it. I just want to do Saturday mornings and do my other stuff.
That's cool, Ken. You know, I always know you're on when I hear the bumper music, whether it be Dio, Bon Jovi, or Def Leppard. It's you, and it's always a treat. So that being said, Ken, I'm down here in Chatham listening to you on the app. So you're everywhere. If you're not touring with a band overseas, you're on the Cape on our radio down here.
Awesome.
So
I love Chatham.
All good stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. What a beautiful place. A little windier than back home, but it's definitely kicking down here.
I bet.
Hey, Ken, if I may.
Yeah.
If I may just comment on something real quick. The Epstein files. May I just for a minute?
Yeah.
So my thought is, I think this is another Donald Trump ploy, lack of a better word. I feel like you said before, and you said it, if there was something in those files, we would have known about this years ago, and we never did. And if there is something in there, I want it to be exposed. That's how I feel as a citizen of this country. Let the cards fall where they may. If Donald Trump, and I support that man, I vote for him every day, from here on out to the end of my life if I could, just because I love what he's doing. If there's something wrong, it needs to be brought out. I would.
It's going
to
be very disappointing if there was actionable prosecution evidence, prosecutable evidence, and nothing was done because the person was just too powerful to go after. I'm going to be really ticked off. It's a bad day for America. I don't think that's the case with Donald Trump, because if there was anything we learned his first term, is that there are enough powers in Washington to disrupt the presidency to the point where he's constantly in court defending himself. And he had the audacity to run again, and they dragged him into every court in the country. So I think if there was anything in those files, they would have leaked it out specifically what his involvement was, if there was anything to go after him, what to stop him from regaining power.
I agree, Ken. I feel this will be one of those things where he just shrugs again and says, told you. I hope that's the case, Ken. But once again, like you said, if there is, and we will be disappointed if there was something, but I really don't think there is. And the Dems are loving this. All the Epstein files, he's hiding them. He's not releasing them, blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see it, but I want to see. I've got a feeling the Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot again over here on this one.
Well, that's shame on them, though. But, you get Democrats, right, like Raskin and others, who are trying to steer this to make it look like Trump is heavily involved with Epstein. There's union protesters and other protesters on the streets protesting ICE and everything, calling the president a pedophile with no proof, with no evidence. They're calling him a pedophile. The only victim that has stated anything about Donald Trump said he was absolutely not involved with anything inappropriate, and I spent a lot of time with him. He didn't do anything wrong. That's not good enough for them.
No. No, of course not. Of course not.
And under oath. I mean, there are other victims, who knows what they're going to say, but the only information we got so far from Ghislaine Maxwell and Virginia Joffrey is that he was not involved in any of this.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see that, and I hope they're released at some point and let the chips fall where they may. I really do, Ken. And but that being said, I appreciate you letting me comment on that. If I may ask you a question real quick about maybe your son and Michael Sweet's band, real quick. Can I talk music?
Of course.
Is he touring with them now?
So my son Keith plays with Michael Sweet from Striper when it's the Michael Sweet band.
Right.
And when it's Striper, Michael Sweet's brother, Robert, is the drummer. But Keith does the choruses. And his wife, Kendra, also, they do the choruses for Striper when they record new records. They'll be doing a show at the Spire in Plymouth on December 13th. It's at Michael Sweet's annual Christmas show at the Spire in downtown Plymouth.
Amazing. He's a gentleman, too. What a real gentleman he is, from all accounts on my end.
He's been good to my son. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Boy, Dad, I'll tell you, you're living the dream, Ken. Honestly, your family's, I mean, people may not know, but people like me know that Striper was, that's huge. It was a big band back in the 80s, and I loved all that music and still do. And to see your son growing up and playing with Michael Sweet, that's going to be surreal for you. And you're touring with your tribute band, which is phenomenal. It's just, Ken, it's just good for you.
It's been fun.
Congratulations.
It's been fun. It's not really work, just traveling and setting up and breaking down, and now most of the places we play, that's all there for us. We don't really have to do that, so it's been a dream to a certain level. Certainly not on a much smaller scale than people who actually have talent. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
You got the talent, Ken. Take care.
Take care of yourself. All right, thanks. Yeah. And thank you for waiting. You're next. Hi.
Yeah, I was the one that talked to you earlier. Yeah, we got cut off. Yeah,
I'm glad you called back. Thank you.
Yeah, well, getting back to what we were talking about, and I can understand what the gentleman was just talking about. But there's something, first of all, you say the Dems. A lot of Republicans are calling for the same thing the Democrats are calling for.
I want the files released.
Okay, then so why you keep on saying Dems?
Well, I'm saying they've been very disingenuous. Where was this from 21, 22, 23? I mean, they're just now suddenly interested in this whole thing? I mean, come on.
Well, the Republicans that were calling for the release of the files and why he's not releasing the files to start with, and, I'm not saying the Democrats didn't jump on board, but it's not solely Democrats.
No, you have... Green is asking for them, Ron Paul, I think the others. Look, if there's anything that America needs right now, it's transparency. And the idea that, somebody's going to be protected because they're too big to fall, we were just told for every time Donald Trump's dragged into a court, nobody's above the law. So how can this list be blocked? My suspicion is that the Justice Department didn't find prosecutable evidence going any further, but I don't know, and I'm hoping that's the case, because that's a bad day for America if we've been protecting the super powerful.
Right. But, you mentioned Maxwell. Don't you find it kind of suspicious that the second-in-command in the DOJ went to the prison, met with her, then they transferred to a club med? Don't you find that suspicious?
Unless she's giving information that they find very useful and she set herself up with some kind of deal.
Well, only information that she gave out was, hey, Donald Trump was a great guy. He didn't do nothing wrong.
Well, but she might have given other information about other people. I don't know. But I do raise an eyebrow at that, yes.
That's not normal. I mean, somebody gets sentenced to jail for all those years, and all of a sudden, you know, I mean, when the Senate was drilling the DOJ, his answer to why she got transferred was the Department of Corrections transferred her, and it had nothing to do with us. Do you really believe that?
I don't know.
You don't?
I don't. I'd be guessing.
I don't have
the information. I mean, I understand the suspicion, sure. I can share that with you, but I don't K-N-O-W.
Well, you know, it'd be the first time in 100 years that somebody from the DOJ, Second Command, went and met with somebody, and then they transferred them to a club med.
Are you sure that's correct, what you're saying? That's the first time in history this has happened?
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly said it, so I trust him.
Okay.
I believe him. That's number one. Now, don't get me wrong, right? I am not here to try to bash Donald Trump, and I'm not here trying to say that he did anything wrong. I'm just saying.
I don't care if you do. I mean, that's your opinion. That's fine.
The gentleman before, just let it out there. And, you know, Donald Trump can't say, you know, it's a hoax, but then have an investigation on the Democrats. That doesn't make any sense either.
Oh, the financial ties.
Why are you having an investigation if it's a hoax?
The financial ties. Well, so I think when we look back and see that they went back at a loan years and years ago that Donald Trump made and prosecute him on that with 34 felonies, when he paid the whole thing back, there's no victim here. The bank said they'd do it again. They're looking at everything he's ever done. And do you really think that the powers in Washington would have left something that would have dismissed him as a preferred candidate if he was involved with the Epstein scandal and had, you know, been involved with underage sex, that kind of thing? Do you think they would have held that back before he got elected?
To be honest with you, I think the pressure from all those women is what's really kind of bringing it on. And also the Republicans that were pushing for it. And Donald Trump also said himself, he said, I have no problem releasing his files. Well, what are you going to say if they vote on it, it goes to the Senate, right? And then it goes to his desk. Should he sign off on it?
Yeah, but I also know, I think what his concern is, now, this is only a guess because I don't know. I think what his concern is that look what they did last week when they released that one paper. We get people convinced he's a pedophile. They redacted the name because the person who's on that paper said he didn't do anything wrong. So they blocked out the name to add to suspicion of him.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's other things like this, is he going to be spending the rest of his 4 years, you know, having to explain something that has been misconstrued by the media and Democrats? I mean, I understand his fear of what could be done with information that doesn't even damn him. But, you know, at the same time, get it all out so people can decide for themselves. They don't have to guess like we're doing.
Exactly. I agree with you on that one. But, you know, the problem we're having now and on both sides is the foolishness that, you know, you come after me, I come after you, you come after me, I come after you. I mean, it's just so...
We all want to see an end to that. I wish they didn't start it, yeah. But they started on him. Donald Trump is pretty much a polite person until he's treated rudely. And then it's all bets are off. He outdoes it. He goes overboard. But I think when somebody commits to lawfare on him, he retaliates. I wish he would be more presidential.
I don't know about that. I mean, Donald Trump is the type of person is if you're not going along with him, he turns on you. Look at Marjorie Greene.
Mm-hmm.
She's been a cheerleader for Trump from day one. You know it. I know it.
But she said some pretty bad things too recently. Yesterday she apologized.
what she said was what she believed and what she thought was true.
I think that's true. But I also think Marjorie Taylor Greene has lunged to some conspiracies that I think require more time and evidence to really say something out loud numerous times.
So all the conspiracies she had before when it was going against Democrats got pushed to the side, but when she says something about Trump, now it's a problem.
She's had several outlandish theories against Democrats, against different things. I don't always subscribe to what she says, but she's free to say them.
I don't know. I just think that the, I'm on board with you. I think there's something not right. I'm not blaming Donald Trump or anybody else, but I think that if you really want to get to the bottom of it, release the files. Nothing's found.
They're going to vote on it tomorrow. So I think we'll get what you want.
But if he keeps, and also one more other thing. I know I can't keep you on any longer, but you know the gentleman, the Japanese guy, I forget his last name, Chi or something like that, that got sentenced to jail, and Donald Trump said he don't know who he is.
The China cryptocurrency thing.
Now, what do you think of that? I mean, he claims he don't even know the guy, but he pardoned him.
Yeah, I think you think Joe Biden knew every person he pardoned?
Oh, gee, now it's tit for tat.
No. No, I'm asking a fair. Do you think that every president knows everybody that they pardoned?
I'll just put it to you this way.
No, let me ask you. No, answer that question. Are you under the impression that every president knew every person they pardoned?
I'm going to answer it the way you would answer it. I don't know.
I can answer that. They don't know.
I haven't heard Joe Biden say, I didn't know that guy that I pardoned.
I can promise you.
Donald Trump say that.
I can promise you that 80% or more of people who are pardoned never met the president, didn't know the president, no matter which president we're talking about.
Okay. But the bottom line is that's not a good look. When you pardon somebody to that magnitude, there was a national security risk, and you say you don't even know.
I've heard, now that woman was fired by the Trump administration, so I want to hear the Trump administration respond because... I like to hear both sides. I haven't heard a response to all this stuff yet.
I heard the response to it. I don't know who he is. I never heard of him.
Well, might not be a lie. But I doubt it.
Something that to that magnitude that you don't even know?
I don't know enough about it. I'll look into it though. I'll give you an honest assessment. I don't know enough about it.
What is people supposed to think when something like that happens? Though I mean. Not picking on the guy, but what is people supposed to think when somebody of that grandeur and magnitude?
All I can tell you is that you would be outraged at every single president if you ever looked at the pardons that took place in every administration. There's outrage.
Man, I trust you. I really do. I mean, I think you're on target with most things.
I don't know what this guy did. I mean, I could give you crazy theories that this guy helped the CIA with information on other activities, which is why he got a break. I couldn't tell you. I don't know anything. But I'm gonna look into it. I just found out about it last night.
Thanks for listening to me.
You bet. All right. Let's get another caller in before we have to take a break. You're on the air.
Hey Ken, how you doing?
Morning.
Have you had an opportunity to read the Mass Municipal Association's report, A Perfect Storm?
Whose report?
Mass Municipal Association?
Not yet, no.
So they put out a document in October of 2025, and it speaks to local aid and how much it has declined over the years for cities and towns. We're like the seventh highest. We have the seventh highest tax rate in the nation, and we're 39th in returned local aid. They talk about since 2010.
In terms of percentage or in terms of actual dollars?
I'm sorry. I believe it's in terms of percentage.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, sorry to interrupt.
They go on to say that since 2010, when adjusted for inflation, unrestricted general government aid has fallen 25% overall, and essentially that same 20 to 30% for every type of city and town across the Commonwealth. They also say that a decade after the true trough of the Great Recession, which I believe they point out is 2012, unrestricted general government aid support has stalled at a relatively low level, despite many years of strong state revenue growth and healthy economic conditions. So the state walks around with their chest out about an $8 billion rainy day fund that garners some $400 million in interest annually. But, you know, it's easy to put money in the bank when you don't fix the house and you don't change the oil on the car. So cities and towns are starving. Maury Healey and Michelle Wu are calling for the abolishment of 2.5, and yet they're withholding local aid from cities and towns that we're entitled to, that we've sent up to Boston.
About 150 cities and towns in Massachusetts have already attempted an override of 2.5.
And have attempted, so that means the 150 failed.
I don't think any of them passed. They've tried it, and they will try again, and eventually they'll be successful, and it's going to be a mistake.
And I think that's exactly what the state is waiting until we cry uncle, until it gets so bad that we have to stop passing overrides. Look what Old Colony is looking at. The I think there's five towns in the Old Colony district. They're looking at a debt exclusion of $280 million plus. Then they're going to have to do Prop 2.5 overrides for operating budgets for that new school up there.
Yeah.
It's going to increase Acushnet's median household tax by $700 a year. And that's a lot of that is because of green initiatives that they're required to put in, according to the School Building Assistance Bureau, I believe, part of the Green, it might be part of the Green Communities Act. All these things speak to the same thing. The state is mismanaging the money that we're sending to them, and then they expect us to raise taxes on they expect local boards, as you pointed out, with that Municipal Empowerment Act, to raise taxes,
right,
so that she can say she's never raised taxes, when in effect, it's their fault. It's Maura Healey's fault.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, but she's off the hook in the eyes of some, I mean, who can't figure it out unless it's pointed out specifically. That's and I can't think of any reason why she would do this other than to run for higher office and look more moderate.
But doesn't she think that if she attempts to run for higher office, doesn't she think that people are going to point this out, the mismanagement that went on down? And you know, she's not operating in a vacuum. She's got a supermajority in the legislature, so she does pretty much whatever she wants.
I mean, it's not a new invention, and people do this all the time. They try to give this little wall of separation, a little insulation between them and their own policy because somebody else actually did it. I mean, that's nothing new.
No, but people have to wake up. It gets to a point where, you know, when is enough enough? I mean, where's the breaking point?
Well, I'm afraid instead, though, we have a populace, we have a voter base who doesn't know when they're being lied to.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. That's due to ignorance. That's due to the dumbing down of the citizen over the last 6 or 7 decades.
That and voter apathy.
Yeah.
It's their friend. Absolutely. It's a shame that we're going through this now, because I don't think we have to.
Well, give me an example. How do we get out of it, though? I mean, at this point.
Well, the first thing we have to do is the legislature has to reexamine the local aid distributions to cities and towns, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it starts, because what that will do is that every city and town right now, I know you talked about $150 million deficit in the city of New Bedford, but every city and town is going through the same thing.
Yeah.
They all have deficits. And those deficits could probably be erased with a revamp of the local aid formula. I mean, it's our tax dollars that goes up there, and we're not getting it back.
No, I know. Yeah, I agree.
I would start with that, at least.
We need to find a government that's willing to operate under the realistic ability of the taxpayers to pay for it. That's not going to happen around here anytime soon.
I agree. All right. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks for the good call. Thanks. We'll be back.
Step into a craft beer time capsule. It's like a museum, another museum downtown, this time for beer. Only it's really fresh beer at Rose Alley Ale House. They have an unwavering commitment to craft beer and delicious buffalo wings that can only be outmatched by Rose Alley's love for the city of New Bedford. Rose Alley Ale House, the number one reason that people should visit the city of New Bedford and do visit. And after you've crushed a beer or two, save it some bone-in or bone-out wings, or even done a couple of shots with your boys, your pals, your friends, downstairs in the underground Sub Rosa bar. Then and only then, check out a museum, shop a local retailer, or take a tour of the National Park, which is now open again. Or just simply admire the beauty of the neighborhood. Come see us at Rose Alley. It's all the great bartenders, great products, great food, great beer. Rose Alley Ale House, the number one reason to visit the city of New Bedford. It's not just a bar, folks. It's a New Bedford Institute.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Said I was in my early 40s with a lot of life before me, when a moment came that stopped me on a dime. I spent most of the next days looking at the x-rays, talking about the options and talking about sweet time. I asked him when it sank in that this might really be the real end. How's it hit you when you get that kind of news? Man, what'd you do? And he said, I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Blue Manchu. And I looked deeper, I've been denying. And he said, someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying.
We're back.
He said, I was finally the hurt.
And we're close to the tree lighting in the city of New Bedford. And I mean, the first person that comes to mind, Armin Marchand, sort of the MC of the whole thing. And what a loss that was. What a nice, nice man he was. 508-996-0500. Well, the topic has been about fiscal apprehension in the city of New Bedford. I don't know that the mayor would paint such a bleak picture as we've heard from some here, but I think there is a lot of truth. I think Proposition 2.5 is going to come under attack quite a bit, and you should show up at every meeting that you can, whether you're in a town or city, and object to that. There are people on fixed incomes, meaning retirees, people on disability, and they will not be able to keep up with the thirsty demands of the Liberal governments, right? So if you bypass Proposition 2.5, you are going to have to sell your house soon after. I can tell you that much. Do not give in. That was created for a good reason. It's the only thing left that has anything to do with fiscal responsibility in Massachusetts, because there's no adult supervision anymore. They know better than you how to spend your money, and they'll convince you that until their last breath. And government should and can be doing more and more and more and more. Now, look, I realize I'm a conservative. I'm in the minority, and especially in a city like New Bedford, greater New Bedford. But there are plenty of people who are reconsidering things. And the political landscape of this country is always migrating, always changing. 508-996-0500. Boy, I got to tell you, though, on a lighter note, I am very excited about this young, fastly improving New England Patriots team. A lot of fun to watch. It looks like we have our franchise quarterback. We sit at 9-2, tied for the best conference record, tied for the best record in the NFL. And we watched maybe the beginning of the end. I mean, right now, Kansas City would not be in the playoffs. The AFC perennial champion, would be on the outside looking in. I suspect they'll get it together enough to sneak in and then menace the rest of the conference once they're in. That's just how much respect I have for Mahomes and Reed. But it is coming to an end. And the windows of these great quarterbacks, you know, their windows of opportunity. And Josh Allen, he's got another 3 or 4 years of peak, and maybe not that much after that. Lamar Jackson, I mean, these are guys who play like young men, and they're not the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady kind of quarterbacks that can stay at that position and play similarly for many more years as a pocket passer and guys who process differently. And we're seeing all kinds of new young quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence is again, finding his stride. We don't know what we're looking at with him. Right? He came out of the first player taken in the draft, did pretty good as a rookie, stumbled a little bit. Now he's got a major, you know, wide receiver who's out, and he's excelling. I mean, they put a beating on the Los Angeles Chargers. So everything's wide open. There's really no alpha team that you fear right now. Look at the Detroit Lions throw up a total of 9 last night against Philadelphia. Philadelphia's look very vulnerable. In fact, the Broncos have now beaten both Super Bowl teams. So there's a real quick change going around. And the Patriots are right in the thick of things. Fast turnaround. It was 4-13 last year. They're already getting 9 wins. And I think on paper, they're favored to win at least 4 of the next 6 before the season starts. So that would put them, if they ended up 4-2 for the next games, it'd be 13-4, more than tripling their win total from last year. Just never see it. Celtics playing pretty good, right, without Tatum. And the Bruins, shocking people. So pretty good local sport, professional sports landscape. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Hi. On this Epstein thing, I don't know, maybe I try to keep things real simple the way I was brought up, but my feeling is if you got nothing to hide,
you hide nothing.
You got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. But this has been available to the public for a number of years now.
Yeah, but I don't get that because so why, if that's the case, if all this information's been available, why is Congress trying not to let it out, but now they've changed their mind and now they're going to let it out? What am I not getting?
Fair question. I don't have the answer to it. I'd like to get that as well. Not just what's in the files, but what was, you know, this inconsistency about what we're going to release and why. I got to take a commercial break, though.
Yeah.